On this week's episode of the We've Seen That podcast, we watched The Untouchables. I'm Anthony.
And I'm Jim.
Cut the music. We are back. Anthony and Jim are here for, what is this, our third week together now?
When Scott's third week in hiatus? A row, I believe, yeah. Of the Busy Season podcast.
That's all right. Poor Scott said he should be back towards the end of March. I'm not sure I'm going to hold him to that, but that's just our newest update. So he is alive, people. He is alive.
Again, if any of the 75.8 bazillion listeners that we have now want to find us a sponsor so that Scott can quit his job, then, you know, we can commit to having all three of us every week.
There you go, and you'll never have to just listen to two of us. You'll have all three.
Exactly.
Any sort of combination. Perfect. But yes, we miss Scott. He will be back. I should be seeing him in a couple weeks, I think. I'm going to a concert with him, so...
Ooh, what concert?
Greta Van Fleet we will be seeing, so hopefully...
Now you're making me feel bad because he 100% texted me to see if I wanted to go, and I was like, eh. Yeah. I like them, but I'm not as big of a fan, obviously, as the two of you.
Right. No, and they're playing in Green Bay, so we'll be driving out there on it's a Wednesday night concert, so I definitely took Thursday off of work, though. Fuck that
noise. Oh, I would have too if I had gone.
So that'll be fun. So I'll get to see how he's doing and if he is, in fact, still alive or he hasn't just created some sort of robot to send us, automated texts that say, I'm off the pod this week. Because that's what it can seem like sometimes. But anyway, Jim, let's jump in. What did you watch this week other than our movie?
So I watched a new movie to me, Braveheart. First time ever watching. I was so blown away by how good this movie was. I'm appalled that I hadn't watched it, honestly. Mel Gibson is electric as William Wallace. Just absolutely feel bad for the Scots people, of whom I love their whiskey, you know. So feel as though it's finally time to do my due diligence and learn a little bit about them, as historical as the movie is to one degree or another. Just absolutely loved it. Thought the all of the acting was top tier. The places where it loses some points for me are fake punching sounds. I absolutely fucking hate that. When they do the thwack sound when they hit someone in the stomach. And sometimes it's a little difficult to understand. I think that's an accent difference, you know, but I watched with subtitles anyways. I ended up giving this a 9 out of 10. Really disappointed it took me until this point in my life to watch it. Seeing as it came out in 95, the only thing is it's a little long, 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah.
Is leaving Netflix at the end of this month too. So if that's the only place it's going to be, you should get some time in to watch it.
Yeah, there's one way to describe this movie, and it is just epic, both in length and just quality of filmmaking. It's pretty incredible. Some of the
fights, and it's absolute scale too. The cast is fucking huge.
Right, and the fight scenes, the open field war scenes, are some of the best. I think they still hold up really, really well. Even to today's standards.
Should be said as well, it won Best Picture, Best Director, Best Cinematography, Best Effects and Sound Effects Editing, and Best Makeup.
Yeah.
So it just cleaned up at the Oscars, in addition to a bunch more nominations there that it didn't win.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a great movie. I haven't seen that one in a while, and maybe I should check it out. I don't think... some reason I do not own that, believe it or not.
The fucking bagpipe music just... reeked of Lord of the Rings music too. It made me so happy. It's I need to watch fucking Fellowship now, right? Or Return of the King, because that's where you get the most Shire music, right?
That's true. There's a lot of just, you know, a lot of Frodo and Sam, obviously, in all the movies, but they're really thinking about home in Return of the King, so they really hammer you down with that Shire music, which is some of the best. That's a good one, Jim. That's a great movie. I need to get around to rewatching.
So glad I watched it. Like, when I first saw how long it was, I'm like, maybe this is not the best way to spend 3 hours, but stuck it out, and I do not regret it at all.
Right. Love it. I personally only watched one movie as well. I have a mountain of shows, and I know Adam's going to be so disappointed in me, but I have, like, made no progress on Succession at all after, like, watching the first 4 episodes in, like, 2 days and loving it, and now I've just been a huge slacker. But I did watch Antlers, which is, like, a horror movie that came out early or, like, later in 2021.
Is that a Daniel Radcliffe movie?
It's not, but I...
That's Horns, isn't it?
Yes. This movie got delayed, for over a year, and it's, not Benicio del Toro,
Guillermo.
Guillermo del Toro was one of the producers, so it kind of caught my attention there, but basically, I'll give you the synopsis. It's... In an isolated Oregon town, a middle school teacher and her sheriff brother become embroiled with her enigmatic student, whose dark secrets lead to terrifying encounters with an ancestral creature.
Ooh, it sounds intriguing.
I gave it a 6 out of 10. There was quite a few really good, like, the acting's pretty great. The whole story about the monster is interesting enough to keep you entertained. I will say the ending is fairly anticlimactic.
That's the worst, isn't it?
Yeah, because, like, they kind of defeat... I don't want to spoil anything, but it almost seems, like, too easy. But the monster is scary when you see it. It's pretty creepy. It's called a Wendigo. That's not giving up too much, but
I've heard of that before. I think I saw it in fucking Scooby-Doo or something.
Mythological creature. But yeah, it's pretty fucked up. There's some creepy parts. But yeah, it was okay. I'm glad I watched it because I wanted to see it. Like, the trailer came out, like, in 2019. And like I said, I think it was delayed for well over a year. So
sometimes you just got to take a flyer on those things. And sometimes they hit. Sometimes they just fall okay.
And that is on HBO. So I'm glad I watched it. But if anyone's willing to sit down for, like, 1 hour and 45 minutes and watch a decent horror flick, that's not a bad option. I do have two other things.
Yeah, let's hear it. Kinda,
I'm currently, as we are doing this, installing Elden Ring on my Xbox.
Good luck,
man. I'm absolutely terrified for how pissed I'm going to be and how just bad at this game that I know I am.
Just don't go throwing controllers. That's the expensive thing when you rage.
I know. All my friends are playing it, and they can't stop talking about it. So, like, I had to.
Adam's fucking loving it, too, by the way. I'm not sure if he messaged you on the side at all, but I know he's been talking to me about it.
Not yet. I'm sure after he listens to this, he'll hit me up. But, oh, God. And I just knew this was going to happen. It looks so gorgeous. And I'm going to hop in, and I'm going to have fun, I know. But when I die, like, 35 straight times, I'm going to get
eventually you'll get tired of getting fucked in the ass.
Yes, exactly. Second thing, I am going to see The Batman on Saturday. We are recording this on a Wednesday, so in about 3 days, I am giving it a preemptive 9 out of 10.
And I hate you a little bit right now.
Seeing any of it.
Except for the trailers, I was messaging obviously. The group with you, and I'm so pissed because I can't go this weekend. Because Angie starts on call Thursday, and she can't leave the house because she's got to be able to answer phones for work.
Yeah.
And she wants to go too, and I don't want to go without her and be a bad person.
Right.
But I'm more and more considering it now. May have to make another walk to the local janky theater.
Well, let's just say when I hit my what we're watching next week, I will mention this, but if you do not see it, I will promise to not, you know, you're going to have to, like, block out my face with some sort of, like, I'll just be grinning from ear to ear probably if I like it or not. I don't
see
know.
Now in my opinion, reactions are okay. I just don't want to know plot. Right
I just seem to let reaction just try to, it pushes my, like, what I'm expecting too far sometimes. I don't know, because
there
that's
are
what
tickets
maybe
available for Thursday for the local theater.
Oh boy. He's already considering. I can see the wheels turning.
This is showing at 3 o'clock. And there's only 4 people in the theater because we're a little town.
Oh my gosh. Look at that.
Like, look at this. It's wide open.
Literally, people, I'm looking at Jim's phone. There's every seat is available, pretty much.
I wouldn't even have to sit next to anybody. Let's talk about ideal theater experience.
Yes. I mean, if you got 3 hours, you know.
3 hours and 11 minutes, it says here.
You just sat through Braveheart, so you should be well conditioned for this type of endeavor.
Right. Oh my god. I might do it. I did that with Detective Pikachu, too, because they had exclusive Pokemon card packs that you got when you went to the theater. So I went without Angie, because she wasn't in Appleton at the time. And I'm like, well, I'm going to go. I need to get the Pokemon cards.
Yes.
Went, and then, of course, we went with my family, and then again with her. So I saw that movie 3 times in theaters, and of course got Pokemon cards every time.
Was there at least different ones that you could get?
Yeah, there were some different ones. It was only a 4-card pack, which was stupid. Oh. And it was a set of like a total of 13 cards. So it's not like there was a lot of variety, but there was some.
Right, right.
I just thought of one other thing I tried that I feel the need to mention. Apple TV Plus has a brand new original show called Severance, starring Ben Wyatt. What is his name? Adam Scott,
yep.
So these people work for a company, and they have had their lives surgically in their brains split between their outside of work life and their work life. So when they show up, they go through an elevator. When the elevator goes down, their brain wipes out any knowledge of their family, what they did last night, anything. And so they just work without thinking about it. They know the people at work because that's part of their work life. But then when they leave, same thing in reverse. Now you only can think about home. And it's supposedly the best work-life balance, they claim, you know, because you literally can't think about the other one. And in the very first episode, they just bring in a new employee and are trying to explain to her what happened to her, because she's in a training room and doesn't understand what's happened, because obviously she can't think about her decision before deciding to work there.
Right.
And it's just really intriguing. It felt very slow and overlong for the first episode. It was an hour-long episode, I believe. But I intend to try more. So it's just strange sci-fi horror-ish thing.
Yeah, that's the kind of vibe I got, that there was almost like some sort of thriller aspect to it. And I thought the concept, like you explained greatly, was that sounds really interesting. So I'm curious to see if you continue. I mean, I don't have Apple TV, so I'd have to
have it for Ted Lasso. When they decide Ted Lasso's done, I may lose the Apple TV.
Yeah, right. So I'll have to enjoy it through you if you continue to, or if you think it's any good, I might have to try to consume it somehow, but
they're handing out trials all the fucking time, too. I know because Adam and I have PlayStation 5s, they gave us a free 6 months of it.
Nice.
Even if you already had a subscription or a trial going, they gave you an additional 6 months of trial. So I've gotten like 18 months for free at this point.
Nice.
Which, I mean, I will never complain about that.
Right.
And if you're trying to get me to get sucked into your service, having top tier content like Ted Lasso is the way to do it.
Right, exactly. And then keep you hooked, you know, long enough to where like you're used to watching it. So maybe when you're 18 months finally runs out, you're like, well, shit, I kind of want to keep this now.
It's like June of this year, and Ted Lasso won't come out, I don't believe, until fall of this year, the third and supposedly final season. So they may fuck me for at least a few months, but if they offer an annual subscription for a discount, ooh, I may have to fuck with that.
Nice. Well, other than that, I mean, we pretty much have kind of hit a sort of a lull here. We've kind of talked in nauseam, like obviously many of the great movies coming out, like Multiverse of Madness, there's only so much you can talk about that movie. Obviously the Batman's huge news, and that is coming out this weekend. We'll be discussing that I'm sure here shortly, but we might just jump into this movie, Jim, that we watched, I believe.
Yeah, we discussed last week trialing like an every other week for Hype Horn, just so that we had a decent amount of things to talk about, because I know at some points I feel like I'm digging bottom of the barrel when I'm finding things to discuss. So this way we can hit the most important things, Batman, Multiverse of Madness, when they come, you know?
Yes, exactly. And it's so hard, too, because we discuss them so many times over the coming months, you know, every time there's a new trailer or...
That's totally true. Well, and like when they release new trailers, because all big movies have 2 or 3 even, between a teaser and then trailer 1, trailer 2.
For sure. But yeah, there's a lot of great movies coming out. I can't wait. I'm seeing one this weekend, and I promise to maybe not ruin it for you, Jim.
If just got
to
rub it in one more time.
Yeah, you know, well, you know, I gotta
stand you.
I just gotta, you know, I'm excited, man.
I know you are. I'm just jealous. That's all. I'm trying not to be bitter.
You'll see it within a week, I'm sure.
Yeah.
We'll
I'm okay. really highly considering going by myself now. You have no idea.
I wouldn't be surprised if I get a Snapchat literally tomorrow and you seeing it before me now. That would be the ultimate get
just
back.
Gotta fucking show you up.
Yeah, for real.
I didn't even consider that because the showings are for tomorrow at 3.
Right. It's like Scott said in the group, he's like, what day is it? I'm like, yeah, Batman's literally already here. Like, it seems like it did creep up on us, even though
we've been talking about it for like 18 months.
I know, and I still can't believe I'm like 3 sleeps away from going to see it. But
anyway. Untouchables.
Yes, sir. Where can you watch this, and what is the synopsis, Jimbo?
So this originally came out in 1987. This is currently streaming on HBO Max. They've been putting a lot of classic stuff on there lately, like 1920s and 30s Academy Best Picture winners. So if that's something you're interested in, you should check it out. Synopsis is, during the era of prohibition in the United States, federal agent Elliot Ness, certified badass, sets out to stop ruthless Chicago gangster Al Capone, and because of rampant corruption, assembles a small hand-picked team to help him.
Yeah. This movie fucking slaps.
It's so fucking good for an older movie, and it's that insane. Old.
No, it just reminded me, I don't really kind of want to monotonously like go through this like scene by scene, because I think there's a couple just like key points that we can lead to, and especially like, you know, certain set pieces and like eventually the ultimate conclusion. But I just want to start off by saying I fucking love 80s crime movies. They're the best.
Casting is top tier here too, like it's just amazing. Fucking Assassin's Row of good casting, because we got Costner as Elliot Ness, Sean Connery as Jim Malone, De Niro as Al Capone, and I just can't get over how electric De Niro is. He steals the show every time he's on screen.
Yes, I mean, he's like at the top of his game here. But in like the 80s and the into like the mid 90s, I mean, De Niro is arguably the best American actor, you know, we have going. So it's just every time I watch
fucking
movies,
young, like I couldn't believe
right,
it.
I go back and watch movies like this and I see him at the top of his game, it's really just like unbelievable, because now it's so hard to picture him like that, because he's usually just been in like comedies in his older
right and our experience with De Niro is middle to late age, you know,
right?
So it's really cool to see him in a young role like this
for sure. But anyway, kind of getting into this thing, like you said, Costner plays Elliot Ness, who has been sent to Chicago by the Treasury Department to basically, like you said, stop Al Capone.
Right.
What a fucking task at this time. Like,
really interesting thing is he works for the Treasury, right? Which is not directly the IRS, but they are the department that controls the IRS. So you have to think this guy's operating in a world of finance, or that's kind of what his enforcement area is. And yet they send him to stop bootlegging. It feels really strange. And we'll get into why that's super important later on.
Right.
But this guy who has no, I don't want to say no experience, but not a beat cop or an organized crime cop necessarily, is coming out to take down one of the largest crime organizations in the country.
And that was like my, I don't have many, trust me, but like that was like my one complaint where like I didn't know enough. Maybe I should do my research on this guy, because it's obviously loosely based on a true story. But I didn't know enough about Elliot Ness's background, like, because obviously you're getting sent into like this war zone, because the opening scene we see a little girl just get completely blown up at like
in
this
a bar,
bar
that didn't want to buy bootlegged whiskey,
right? So we know he's just getting into like basically a war zone with these mobsters, and I just don't know if I knew enough his background. Like you said, is he like, does he have experience? Because all they really say is that he's from like the Treasury Department. What is his experience in dealing with, like you said, organized crime or like you know, any sort of like on the street police work. I mean, I'm sure he must have been kind of involved in that from the beginning, but I wish
right because you couldn't send someone in totally blind.
Right.
Of the when his reception when he shows up at the police station that he's going to be working out of too is really interesting too, because the reporters are there to interview him and they are throwing all kinds of loaded questions at him, asking whether or not he drinks, you know, what his opinion of prohibition is, and he answers as best he can, obviously, that he doesn't drink, and then says, I don't have an opinion on prohibition. It is the law of the land right now, you know, just trying to stand above it, say, I don't give a shit what the laws are. I just have to enforce them.
And that's basically his entire theme for most of the movie, is trying to obey the law at all costs and enforce the law at all costs within the rules of the law. I think we even hear him kind of say that to Sean Connery's character, Malone, when he's kind of explaining like what he wants to accomplish. But you can tell kind of the first time he meets Malone, he gets like this feeling, and like as the movie goes on, that he's going to have to like...
He's going to have to rein him in.
Right. Or even break some of his own rules in order to, you know, catch or defeat, you know, the mob at the end, which it just seems like everything can be done your way for up to a certain point, but when one side isn't playing by any rules at all, it's like it becomes really hard to accomplish anything when they're willing literally to do anything to not get caught, which is
right
nuts.
And Malone tells him early on, when Malone joins the team, he's like, if they pull a knife, you pull a gun. They send one of yours to the hospital, you send them to the morgue. You know, it's all about one-upsmanship in terms of the violence as well.
Right.
But Malone is a beat cop, right? Normal guy who is walking around handing out tickets and whatnot.
Yeah.
Yells at Elliot for littering, of all things. That's how they supposedly meet.
Yeah.
And so Elliot then likes him, his astuteness on knowing that Elliot was wearing a gun, you know, and his attitude towards the whole situation, ends up promoting him, so to speak, to be on this task force.
Right. Because that is ultimately his biggest challenge. Speaking of Ness, he quickly realizes that Capone has men, or at least has corrupted the Chicago Police Department, and there's really nobody he can trust at all unless he handpicks a certain group of people, and that's ultimately what he has to do, seeing as that's how he picks up is that the Oscar Wallace and George Stone are the other two guys then, I believe, of the task force. Yeah, so
George Stone not being his real name, he's trying to hide the fact that he's Italian. Real name is Giuseppe Petri.
Right.
And we get one of the poor moments of the movie, I think. They go to the police academy. That's where they find George Stone, because he's a great shot and he's got a good attitude towards fighting crime. But James Malone makes some wildly racist comments about him being Italian and about how you can't trust them, uses a couple of slurs in order to get a reaction out of George. It's not a strong moment, but it does get him on the team.
Right.
I don't know how accurate that is to real life either, I guess.
Yeah, I think he just was trying to, like you said, kind of get a reaction out of him and see how far maybe he's willing to go, because Malone seems to have obviously been living in Chicago now for a number of years and been on the police force. He knows just how far this corruption goes and how far they'll have to be willing to go if they're really trying to bring any sort of change. So yeah, they're really just looking for the best of the best, or maybe even the craziest people they can find.
Right. You know? And Elliot pretty specifically crazy. Has said when they're building this team, he wants people who are unmarried.
Right.
Because Elliot himself is married and throughout the course of the film has a child in addition to the one he already had.
Right, exactly. And we even get a scene where his family is openly threatened by a hitman of the mob, and he has to quickly then get them out of the city as soon as possible, or at least to some hiding spot, which they will remain for the rest of the film, at least, until the
job is
done.
Yeah, we don't see him again for quite a while.
Right, right. Yeah, it's a fucking wild trip. One other scene I want to talk about, Jim, is the Canadian scene. So our group of Untouchables gets a tip off. Well, Malone finds it because he seems to have better connections than Elliot Ness does, obviously.
Well, he's got connections to the police department, right? Because he's worked there for years. But he knows which of the cops are dirty and then which of the ones will then pass him information.
Right, right. So we get like this crazy scene where the mob is going to, Capone is sending men up to the Canadian border to grab a bunch of barrels of Canadian whiskey. But the information has been leaked to Malone and Ness and the gang, and they kind of ran ahead of them into the, to where the Canadian border is, and they meet up with a bunch of Mounties, and they're going to try and...
The Mounties were so great.
They were going to try to shut down the whole operation, or at least stop them in the act of doing it and try to arrest some people. This scene quickly falls apart, though, because the Canadian, like, police force, like, doesn't listen to the instructions at all, and they sort of, like, come firing earlier than they should have, alerting that...
Yeah, they didn't wait for whatever the signal was supposed to
right.
be.
Right, so it kind of sends everything into a panic, and there's an awesome shootout on the bridge there, and we get, like, one of the characters gets injured, I believe it's George Stone.
He gets shot in the chest or in the shoulder.
Catches, like, a graze, and they end up confiscating all the barrels. They even capture one of the mobsters for questioning. What did you think of Malone's interrogation of the dead body?
I thought it was great. So there, Elliot had gone after a separate mobster, whereas James or Jim Malone had gone after the bookkeeper who had a ledger of Al Capone's books, right? So Elliot kills the mobster in a little cabin where they had originally, like, been hiding out before the whole ambush. And so there's a dead body lying on the front porch. James or Jim brings the bookkeeper back to try and get him to decipher these coded account books. He's refusing. Eventually, Jim takes it too far, like, socks him in the mouth a couple of times, right? And Elliot's not okay with this. So then Jim goes out on the porch, sees the dead body, slams it up against a wall, like on a window, so that the guy inside can see, and shoots him in, puts a gun in his mouth and shoots out the back of his head. Even though the guy's already dead, he's acting like the guy's alive the whole time, you know. And then the bookkeeper finally talks when he sees how far Jim is quote unquote willing to go. I think it's genius. I wouldn't have been able to think on my feet like that. Right.
You're not from Chicago. I love that. It's just a great...
There are so many good quotes in this movie. Like, just beyond good.
And the delivery of... I'm not... I haven't seen too many films with Sean Connery in it. And it really is criminal. Because he is so good in this movie. And it's nice that he gets to play, like, an Irish... American, because he is an Irish actor, so it helps with
just,
like,
lets his accent out full force.
Right, he can just kind of, you know, or he's Scottish, sorry, but you know, it just allows him to just be himself, and he's just so fantastic. He did win Best Supporting Actor for this movie, and I can see why. It just makes me want to go back and watch his Bond movies. Just a
he's
mini
so
rant.
Good as Bond too, just ridiculous.
I know, it's just. I'm going to have to go down like a Sean Connery rabbit hole now, and I'm okay with it. I'm not mad about it. So basically, after they confiscate all this booze and the ledger, which is the big thing to try to get any sort of dirt on Capone, because he has left no paper trail of, like, any transactional for money or paying taxes, so they're going to try to get him for tax evasion.
Yeah, we should mention that now, because Oscar Wallace, one of the Untouchables, has been dropping hints, like, all the time that Al Capone never files his taxes, quote-unquote has no income because he doesn't receive payments of any type. Right. And hasn't filed a tax return in 3 years.
Which seems a little weird, Jim, because he lives in a luxury hotel room.
Right.
With
hundreds of people waiting on him hand and foot.
Right. So if he's not making any money, I don't know how he's paying any of that. But anyway, they're back in Chicago. I believe they're at the precinct, and they're going over, like, how they have to get this witness that they captured, like, to probably the holding cell or they're taking him somewhere
into witness protection or some shit, because they probably made him a deal about protecting him.
Right, they want to keep him alive until they can get a trial date. So Oscar and him and then one other policeman in the elevator are going down. Malone tells him to, or Elliot tells him to maybe get down there, get to the bottom floor, get in the truck and just drive or something. Just, right, you know, the two of you. To which we see them get in the elevator, and of course the cop that's in there with them has been made or turned, I guess.
That's the same guy who threatened Elliot at his family's home. Yeah, gotcha. It's Frank Nitti.
Nitti. Okay.
That's which I don't know that he did all of those things, but he is a real person, a real hitman that worked for Al Capone.
Right. And he's ruthless in this film, but I couldn't recognize him. That's good. That makes sense now.
Before we keep going, just to talk accuracy, the whole thing at the Canadian border never happened. It's not real.
Never happened. So why do they have to put such an elaborate scene? Ah, it's for Hollywood, though.
Right.
You know, you gotta,
because it's badass.
Add some fireworks.
But so but anyway, Frank Nitti kills the bookkeeper, their witness, and Oscar Wallace in the elevator before killing another cop in the alley, taking the car and getting away.
Right. And it just goes to show you, like, how, you know, he could have been let in there, which I'm assuming by someone else on the police force. I'm sure he had ties, or Capone probably had ties to many members of the police force, or at least paid them off at some point, or threatened them.
Which, once they get into the book, they see that he's got judges, he's got basically the whole police force, you know,
right,
federal judges, not just local judges, all being paid off.
Which is absolutely insane. It's like, how big of a scale, when you really think about it, that this guy was running. I mean, just, it's truly insane. But anyway, Ness finds, you know, Ness and Malone run down, see that Oscar has been killed along with their witness, and they're kind of left stuck in the mud again.
They realize now DA doesn't want to prosecute without a witness.
Right. And they kind of, at least Malone for sure, realizes they have to really step up their game as far as extreme measures if they really want to get Capone now. Because now they need his, because they don't have him, but they need, like, his whatever.
They had the bookkeeper, so I guess I'm unclear on who they got next. Because I thought they just kept calling him the bookkeeper, even though they get a different guy.
Right, maybe like his accountant or another guy that, or just at least another guy that worked for Capone that could read the ledger for them.
Right.
And kind of, you know, basically hand over the information that they need.
And they get him by finding him at the train station as he's about to skip town. And they have a huge shootout where Elliot takes out single-handedly like 10 or 15 fucking mob members.
It felt like it, yeah.
George Stone throws him a revolver, at which point he catches it, finger on the trigger, and shoots another mobster.
All while saving a baby rolling down in a carriage down the stairs.
Right. Again, this didn't happen.
The one sad thing before that is, unfortunately, Malone is killed. He gets one little bit of badassness, but he doesn't even get to kill a guy. He just gets to, like, whip around with a shotgun and insult the guy with some more racial slurs, and then basically...
Yeah, before Frank Nitti blows him away from up on the next fire escape.
Right. Because the guy, if he would have just shot him and not just, like, wandered aimlessly outside, you know, he probably would have been fine. But I understand the movie has to happen, so I get it. It is just... Because he was probably one of the better characters, so it just sucks to see him go
possibly
out like that.
Possibly the best, I think. I don't think that's a stretch.
Right. But before he dies, he's able to, like, you know, after he's been shot 1,000 times, he's able to mutter the words of where, like, the new bookkeeper is going to be, and he tells them to get him at the train station. So that's how they find out they're going to stake it out. And like you said, there is just an absolutely insane shootout. And, like, it is. Just the, like, he's dragging the baby carrier, holding it up. The guy slides in, tosses him a pistol, and he just pops the one guy. And then now there's one mobster left, and he's got the
accountant,
like, by the throat, you know, telling him he's going to shoot him unless they let him go. To which
George Stone is lying on the floor.
This is pretty ridiculous.
He is the best shot in the Academy because Elliot had lost it.
Right.
And from the floor, holding the baby carriage up on the steps, shoots the mobster in the head without killing the accountant.
I guess, man, that's why they got him. He's the best shot in the fucking Academy.
Right.
You know? And it really paid off here. Yeah, I mean, that was pretty just a ridiculous scene. I want to say, though, the tension in that scene was, like, literally off the charts.
It they shot did a, so well. An
amazing job. Because you're, like, sitting there, and he keeps looking at the clock, because it's, like, 12:05 loading time onto the train. And they get there like 10 minutes early, and it feels like you're there for the entire 10 minutes because he keeps looking at the clock, keeps looking at this woman with the baby. He's watching everyone that walks in that looks like a mobster, could be someone there to shoot him down. And then when a few of them really start to show up, you're like, oh shit, it's like about to go down. And it really pays off.
And in movie world, he thinks they know his face because after Oscar was killed, he goes to Capone's hotel and yells at him in the lobby.
Right.
Whereas in real life, they did not meet until after Capone was convicted.
Okay. Yeah, because that was an insane scene, too, that, like you said, its historical accuracy is questionable, obviously. But him just running into the hotel room to, like, go face-to-face with Capone is pretty ballsy.
Yeah, and at the end of that scene, he is ready to pull a gun. And, of course, Al Capone's entire squad pulls guns back at him.
It's pretty nuts. So anyway, we basically are then on trial. They are able to at least get Capone into the courtroom because they now have at least something to charge him with.
Well, and think about this too. He had paid off so many people. He was like, even if I show up, there's no way I get convicted. So I find that getting him into the courtroom not terribly impressive because he would have shown up anyways under the guise of acting like a legitimate businessman.
Yeah. For sure, and he doesn't even, usually up until this point, hasn't had to worry about anything, because he's had everyone's, you know, tied around his finger on some sort of string. At one point, we see Nitty kind of reach over and give him a note to read, to which he hands it back. At this point, Ness notices that Nitty has a gun on him. He tells the bailiff to escort him out, so they both go out there with Nitty, and Nitty is able to, like, prove that he can carry it with some
sort of,
like, BS.
He's got a blank business card with a handwritten note from the mayor that he's allowed to do whatever he wants, basically.
And if I'm Ness, obviously you're calling bullshit, but this bailiff is, like, pretty, like, lenient. He's like,
give him the gun back right now.
I gotta let him have it, man. I'm like, that's all it takes is a little white card that just says you can have this gun. Like,
right.
What the fuck? There's, like, nothing to it.
So,
go ahead.
Elliot goes to light a smoke with a pack of matches that Nitty had, opens the matchbook, sees written on the inside of it Malone's address. So then obviously he knows he's the person who killed Malone, chases him up to the roof of the courthouse building in Chicago, where Nitty tries to shimmy down a rope, but eventually climbs back up because Ness had him dead to rights, standing above the rope.
Right.
So I don't know why this was the decision that the character made, but Ness allows him to climb back up before eventually saying, you're going to be prosecuted for the death of Jim Malone or the murder of Jim Malone. And as he's walking him off the roof, Nitty says something that upsets Ness, saying that Jim died squealing like a pig, like an Irish pig. Think about it when I beat the rap, you know? So instead, Ness throws him off the roof of the Chicago courthouse downtown, where he falls through a fucking car and dies. Again, this didn't happen.
I bet not, because I think Ness would get in some trouble for that.
Nitty died of suicide like decades later. It's not even remotely similar.
Right. And this is the one super corny line. Obviously, there's corny lines in, like, every 80s, like, action movie, but, like, as he's throwing Nitty off the roof and he's, like, screaming, obviously, Ness goes, did he scream like that?
Yeah.
As he's, like, falling, I'm like, okay.
That left a little to be desired.
That's a little much. But anyway, now Nitty is dead. So after that terrible one-liner, we do get a pretty good one. I'm always a huge fan of one-liners. NASA's walking back into the courtroom. George meets him in the hallway or whatever, and he asks, like, where's Nitty? And he just says he's in the car.
Yeah.
That was great. I did like that.
That's a really solid one.
Yeah.
It's at this point that George says they found a note with the list of all of the jurors and amounts of money next to them, indicating that all the jurors had been bribed. So they take a recess to the judge's chambers, where Ness eventually says, not on screen, that the judge was in Capone's book of payments and whatnot, even though he apparently wasn't in there.
But
because the judge didn't want to do anything about the jury problem.
Right. And that's where it's like, you're lying to him saying that he's not, but it like shows that he was crooked at some point, because if he believes the threat, you know.
Right, he believed he should, some reason.
Right, he should know that he's not that. Paid off or not in the ledger, because
not by Capone at least.
Right, exactly. So the judge, you know, obviously basically then caves and gives in to Ness, and they switch juries with like a courtroom down the hall, basically. Right.
Apparently the jury switching shenanigans did happen.
Okay. That's interesting, actually. Cause then, well, according to the movie now, we don't even get the swap of juries. Capone really just starts to lose his mind and starts like punching. Yeah, and Capone's
lawyer says, we want to change our plea from not guilty to guilty.
Right. To which Capone punches him in the face, and he's getting held back by a bunch of people. Ness goes up to him and says, like, one of the quotes Malone said earlier in the book or in the movie.
Here ended the lesson.
Yes, right. Something about work harder and harder, and then, yeah, here ended the lesson once you, yeah, it was good. That was a good line. Yeah, so basically Capone gets put away. I think we find out it's for 11 years, according to one of the news clippings.
Yep.
He gets sentenced for. I don't know. I'd have to look it up. Was he able to ever get out?
He did get out, and he survived for 7 or 8 more years.
Okay.
He apparently was starting to really devolve at the end of his life. He had neurosyphilis, which is when you have syphilis and let it advance so far it starts to fucking degrade your brain.
Holy shit.
Right? God. Apparently at the time there was not yet a treatment for it, so most people who had it couldn't do anything about it, whereas now it's easily treatable and curable.
Yeah. Oh, that's insane. What a shitty way to go.
I know, right?
But I guess we shouldn't be like feeling too bad for him, though. He's kind of a shitty person.
Kind of.
Basically, then after that, we get a nice scene with George, where the last two remaining members of the Untouchables. Ness basically says he's going home. So he's leaving Chicago. I don't know if that means he retired after this or not. I'd have to do some research, but
I kind of doubt it. I was reading as well, you know, the movie shows him as a married family man, whereas at the time he was a bachelor living with his parents in reality. Okay. So he seemed to have a lot of life left ahead of him, whether it's a career or what.
Yeah. Well, I'd say that's one pretty good career defining moment, though, you could put on your resume. You know,
makes at least you very hireable.
You got to put away Capone for 11 years. It's pretty good.
Better than anyone else had done.
No one was able to do anything else before that.
Frank Nitti apparently succeeded Capone to take over the Chicago outfit of the mob.
Okay.
And did that for a period of time until he killed himself, I believe.
I find all that stuff just truly amazing. Prohibition era. What a fucking time. There's so much content you could have.
That's the last thing I think we need to talk about is, this is set in 1930. Do you know when Prohibition was repealed?
I'm not off the top of my head.
1933. No. By the time they convicted Capone in 31, there was less than 2 years of Prohibition left.
Jesus. So he had basically done his damage already anyway.
Right, because Prohibition lasted from like 20 to 33.
What a fucking insane, insane time.
Right, and that leads to the last quote of the movie, kind of, is reporter comes up to Elliot outside the trial, again, which he wasn't at, asks him, they say they're going to repeal Prohibition, what'll you do then? And he just says, I think I'll have a drink.
That's a good one. I like that.
Yeah, I like that one a lot.
Even we see, they weren't all perfect. You get, even before Malone dies, you see him kind of sneak a drink out of, like, a hidden bottle he's got. So it's tough. I don't know. I've never lived in a time where I couldn't just go have a drink of beer or something, but I can imagine that even the people that were fighting for justice probably, you know, like,
indulged. In
that point, still indulged a little bit.
Well, when he's trying to just use regular cops who are already out of the academy, he says to him, like, if you're on this team, you cannot drink the entire time.
Right.
You know, and which didn't win him any points.
No, and he's coming in here like some hotshot already, like, in their eyes anyway, and he's just going to try to change every, you know, it had to have been difficult. It's amazing that he got as much accomplished as he did going into a situation like that.
The key to that was having the small team of people who actually cared about what they were doing.
Right, for sure. Because you'd never be able to fight, you know, the layers and layers of corruption on, you know, all levels of, you know, starting with police. And then, like you said in the ledger, you had fucking judges and federal judges and lawyers and all sorts of fucking people, you know.
Yeah. It's crazy. I like to think that when it comes to, like, fraud, embezzlement, stuff like that, or even committing crimes like this, everyone has the dollar amount where they will do it, you know. And that's... this is kind of proof to that, you know, because they had all kinds of people paid off. People who probably thought before they were being paid that they were good people, you know?
Right, for sure. One quick thing, which I like to do just when, I know, movies are critically acclaimed a little bit. So like we touched on earlier, this movie was nominated for 4 total Oscars, it looks like. Sean Connery winning for Best Actor in a Supporting Role. Also nominated for Best Art Direction, Best Costume Design, and Best Original Score, which was done by the great Ennio Morricone, or Morricone, pardon my pronunciation, which he's famous for, like, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. He did The Hateful Eight by Quentin Tarantino. Like, so he had a combination of just great fucking actors, directors, and sound, and obviously costume
design. I'm not sure people. I ever see a situation where this would have won costuming. It's fucking bomber jackets, suits, and fedoras. They must have been nominated by the fedora lobby, because everyone fucking wears one.
Maybe, or just on the basis of Nitty's white suit that single-handedly.
Yeah.
that he wore most of the movie.
And what's-his-face wears a white suit at 1.2, Capone.
Yeah. It's just... I do love this type of shit, man. These movies are awesome. With that said, Jim, since you recommended this last week, I'll let you have kind of like the final conclusion, so I'll go first.
Okay.
I gave this movie an 8 out of 10. I fucking loved it. This is like the second time I've ever seen this movie, so... and I obviously didn't remember much from the first time, so it's been a while. So this was awesome to get back to. Brian De Palma, the director, obviously had a ton of great tension building scenes, which I just loved. We talked about the train station one, but obviously the scene before Malone gets killed, you get the guy like sneaking through the window. The camera works awesome.
You can cut the tension in a lot of these scenes with a fucking knife. It's just palpable.
It is. It's insane. And I thought that was done extremely well. It was awesome. Not much to complain about, really. Maybe a couple of like goofy maybe CGI scenes or something, like the guy falling from the roof looked kind of hokey, but other than that, I mean, there's not much as far as historical inaccuracies. You can take maybe a couple points off that, but other than that, I just thought it was a super entertaining movie. So 8 out of 10 for me.
I came in at an 8 out of 10 as well. Again, disappointed by some of the historical inaccuracy, but I think the real life story leads to a lot more like pen and paper police work than it does to fucking shootouts. So I can see why they made that decision. Do I think it was the best decision? No. This leads me to want to watch a documentary about this. I've said that before about some of our historical movie choices, as well as to read the book that Elliot Ness wrote.
Oh, that would be good.
Also titled The Untouchables.
This was, I guess, which I didn't know, this was like a TV show back in the day.
They did make
a
miniseries of it.
Multiple. I think the movie came after, but it's crazy to think that this had been done before, like in its own TV style first. I'd be almost interested to watch that. It might be more documentary style like you're talking about, and who knows, it might be. I've never seen it or heard anything about it really, so I don't know how good it was or how well it would hold up now, but an interesting thing.
I looked and it didn't appear to be streaming anywhere. So I'm not sure that we have an easy way to see it.
Right. Probably something you'd have to just like suck it up and buy.
Probably I did look on Amazon for the price of the book, and it's like $40 to get a paperback version or $100 to get a hardcover. So I don't know if it like went out of print or something or what, but
right.
It seems must be hard to get because the prices are ridiculous on it.
That does sound ridiculous just for like a, you know, a book that you'd think would be pretty popular that they'd have like,
I mean,
you know,
it's nonfiction, right?
Right. That's nuts. Wow. That would be an interesting read though. It'd be something I would definitely look into.
As an accountant, I think this movie should be required viewing for anyone who gets their CPA. Regardless of the historical inaccuracy, just gives a little weight to the Treasury Department. You know, yeah. If you're going to go into tax, be aware that they can and will come for you.
Yep. That's, yeah, you can say that's your greatest calling card, man. You guys caught Capone.
Exactly.
That's
right?
What you put him away for.
Tax for fucking evasion. Tax evasion.
Out of all the shit he could have went to jail for, you got him for tax evasion.
When I first watched this movie, I watched it with my dad as a teenager, right? And he had told me this is about how Al Capone got put in prison. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And then you've come to find out it's about taxes, fucking taxes. You know, I couldn't believe it at first, but it's a super interesting and unique story.
It is, because you can tell that they just want to get him by any means necessary.
Yeah, because it's a total side shot on how to get him in jail somehow.
Right.
You know?
And it takes, you know, incredible. I mean, so it just takes people to like actually just even think about that, you know, that using that as a tool to try to put them away, you know, rather than versus just bare knuckle, you know, the old everyday, just like try to get them committing a crime, you know, or some sort of violent crime. But
right. Yeah. Right. Which sometimes can be harder to prove. Whereas here they had a literal fucking book of documents that says, hey, he got money.
Right.
And the federal government says, well, we never got a tax return with your social on it, you know. It was perfect. You have documents proving it. Whereas if someone murders someone, half the time you got to see them do it, and then you got to convince 12 other people that you saw them do it.
Right. And in Capone's case, I mean, we see him murder one person in this movie, but
again,
he probably
also
had,
didn't happen apparently.
Yeah. So he obviously had people doing that for him a majority of the time.
Right. Because he wanted to keep his hands clean.
Right. Right. Yeah. So great recommendation, Jim. This movie was fucking awesome. With that said, we're going to be jumping back in the time machine. Now, we hit 87 in this movie. We hit 98 last time with Event Horizon. Now we're getting back to
current.
This year, 2021. Best Picture nominee, West Side Story. Just got to Disney Plus, right, Jim?
That's literally today, March 2nd. So if you have Disney Plus, you can watch this one with us.
Cool. So yeah, check that out. Steven Spielberg directed it.
If you have HBO, you can watch the classic one. That is on there right now, I believe.
Oh, cool. Yeah, there you go. Do that too. Yeah, like we said, Best Picture nominee. Jim informed me that this is like one of the last. He's like halfway through Drive My Car, and then he needs to watch this. And he'll
that'll be
watched
it, and I will have seen all the Best Picture nominees for this year.
Wow. Which one's your favorite so far?
Belfast.
Is it Belfast?
Down. It's a 10 out of 10. It's a perfect movie. I fucking loved it. I can't get over that movie.
You had to buy that one, right? That
I did.
Not
it's not streaming.
Yet? Okay.
Yeah. Whereas King Richard I got from Redbox, but is hitting streaming like late this month.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, I'll have to make it a point to probably check. I mean, I should try to do that every year. If I call myself a movie lover and I'm on a movie podcast, I should at least try to watch all Best Picture nominees.
Yeah, it's a goal of mine for coming years now.
Right. It's a good idea. I would like to own all of them, too, at some point.
I mean, like, if you're going to own them, you'd have to, like, do just the winners, because it's been going since the 20s.
Right. Well, that's what I meant. Yeah, just, like, the winners.
And then you're going to be stuck with some real stinkers, like fucking Gone with the Wind is a trash-ass movie. I hate that.
I'd find it difficult to really. It would almost be just more of, like, a an artistic sort of like
it's like collection. Owning the Criterion collection,
right? I don't think I could literally sit down and watch those movies from like 1925. I mean, maybe I'd have to watch them at least once. I couldn't just be a stan like that and not do it and just own them. But I'm not saying I'd enjoy them. It'd probably be a tough sit, but who
be
knows?
Homework.
Yeah, exactly. It really would be.
If it matters to you at all, a fuckload of old Oscar winners like from the 20s and 30s are just posted like this week to HBO. Not, I can't remember now if I mentioned that at the top or not, but
you did. Yeah, reminding you did. Yeah, I should go back on there because HBO's got a
pretty extensive library. Catalog.
Yeah, it's fucking nuts.
I still firmly believe that they are the best streaming service in the business right now. It's not even close.
It's hard to compete. They got a lot of good shit, man, and a lot of good exclusives. Their TV shows are usually the best, so it's hard to compete right now.
Right.
But other places are getting there. Paramount's starting to pick up their game with a couple of their exclusive TV
shows. Yeah, and later this month, the 24th of March, is Halo show, which
yep.
We haven't really heard any sort of preemptive reviews or anything, but trailer looks fucking hot.
Yeah, and I'll be excited. I mean, I'll basically digest any sort of Halo content because I'm just a huge fan. So, awesome. Well, yeah, so that kind of wraps it up for us, people. We appreciate it, as always. Jimmy, where can the good people find us?
As always, you can follow us on Twitter at @weave_scene_that. Like us on Facebook or email us at scenethatpodcast@gmail.com. Again, that's scenethatpodcast@gmail.com.
Perfect. Well, everyone, thank you again for listening to the 77th episode, The Untouchables. Join us next week for West Side Story. I'm Anthony.
And I'm Jim, and roll credits.